Blog Talk Radio.
Another action-packed show, and that's right, it's Guasavara, a non-violent resistance, a non-violent war against ignorance, against racism towards the Taino people. How many times, and don't lie, how many times you hear that the Tainos don't exist? Can you believe it? After all these years, they keep saying it, but Taino Radio, its existence is based on the resistance that we are still here. So me, right here in the studio, Taino Radio, you there, Tainos everywhere, welcome once again to a beautiful show. Tonight's going to be exciting because guess what? I got two, not one, but two co-hostesses, man. And you know, we got the banner out, we got the flyers been going around, the Taino groups, and we've been getting a lot of great feedback. And right now, I want to introduce one of the youngest co-hostess that's been a veteran here in Taino Radio, and her name is Anani, also known as Waterflower. Are you there?
Hello.
Hey, all right. Welcome back, man. How you feeling?
Thank you for having me, Sanakori. I am feeling very good and blessed. Today, I'm very excited for this show, honestly.
Oh, that's great, man. We got this, man. And guess what? I have another co-hostess, and she was also on the flyer. And she is from the mountains of the Poconos. That's right, straight out of Pennsylvania. Her name is Bana. Are you there?
Hello.
Hey, what's up? How's it going? Tagway, Tagway, Tao, hello. How are you, Bana?
Tagway. I'm feeling great. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me. Today's going to be a great show, so I can't wait to get started.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you know what? This show would not be possible without this co-host. All right, there they go. That's right, they're with us tonight. They are with us tonight, the Coquis. That's right, they don't have really, they don't want to share their names. They just want to be known as Coquis. What do you guys think? Want to say something to them? Go ahead, I need you start.
Honestly, yeah, I miss the Coquis. I miss them so much. They used to put me to sleep on the island, and they used to make me feel comfortable being outside at night, especially. I miss the Coquis, so that's what I would have to say to them.
All right. There you go. Cool. Oh, that's nice. That's some nice words they share with you. How about you, Bana? What do you have to say to our co-host, the Coquis?
I would say, even though I haven't met you yet, you still have a place in my heart.
Oh, that's right. That's right, because you've never been to Borinquen. Coquis, what do you have to tell? What do you have to tell, Bana? Oh, that's sweet. They want you to go over there. They're waiting for you. All right,
I,
let me show you
I
around.
I feel so honored.
No, man. That's awesome. Well, today we're going to have a nice show. It's kind of, we don't have the boards open today, the circuits. We got some little technical difficulties. Hey, where's that intern? I always have our problem with these interns, you know? If anybody wants to intern at Taino Radio, just hook it up. Just write me, TainoRadio1491@gmail.com. Hook it up. I need an intern to check out with the studio gadgets here. But, hey, man, so what makes a Taino indigenous Caribbean person? As you know, man, how many books you've read that they always say we don't exist, right? How many people you've spoken to, they look at you and they say, what? Tainos exist? Aren't you Puerto Rican? Aren't you Dominican? You know, aren't you Jamaican? Are you Haitian? Like, what is that all about? What do you guys have an opinion on that? Let's go with Bana on this one. What do you think? Then we'll go to Anani, the water flower.
So in my opinion, to me, from researching and reading all these stories, especially our creation stories and, you know, documentations and everything that is still going on today, just the fact that people still think we don't exist is definitely a lie. I would say that people just don't want to come in terms to understand that we're still here. We're still, you know, thriving. And I just feel like, you know, the way that, you know, Columbus and the colonizers said that we're not here doesn't mean that we're not. We're still here. But it's not the way that people would want to perceive us as, if that makes sense.
Okay, I get it. Yeah, man. People always have an opinion, right? We know about that, right? Everyone has an opinion, right? So what do you think, Anani, or a.k.a. Waterflower?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like no one really knows the term Taino. I think people are more familiar with the term Arawak Indians, especially in the Caribbean. Everyone knows Arawak. And throughout my life in social studies, studying in, you know, the DOE system, it's always been taught to Arawak Indians of the Caribbean. So whenever I used to bring up, like, well, Arawak, yes, but specifically, like, Haiti and Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico, it's all Taino. That's the correct term. That's the more inclusive term for those people. And they would always look at me like, oh, I've never heard of that term, Taino. What is that? But I feel like a lot of people from the islands and not the land here know about it more. So it's interesting because when you go over there, a lot of people are familiar with it, and the people over here in the United States aren't. So it's interesting. And, yeah, it's always, like, a good conversation starter to explain to people what it is being Taino and what does that background look like.
Oh, that's good. Great. That's some great insights there. You know, recently we just completed, like, a 9-week course, Taino Radio, on Zoom Fridays. And we looked at the creation stories. And Bana, I just wanted to ask you, you were one of the presenters, facilitators of these Zoom Fridays, Taino Radio. Can you break down the part where we talk about the Kasiwahagua and how the people came out of Kasiwahagua? And there was a lot of transformations that occur. You don't have to go into the names per se, but what were the four gifts that was given to this world by Atawe and Yokahu? Can you just break it down?
So from all the Zooms that we had on Fridays, with that specific story, we do have our four human medicines that was gifted to us. First, I wanted to start with the human world. Second will be the mineral world. Third would be the plant. And then lastly would be the animal world.
That's awesome, man. That's right. We did discuss those four. You know, one of our greatest cultural hero in Guajayona, representing that which is powerful in the human, right, the human world. And then, you know, in these stories, it talks about how Guajayona, at the end of the story, was like, man, everyone's turning into a mineral. No, I'm sorry, not everyone. You know, a person turned into a mineral. Then they turn into birds. Then they turn into trees. You know what? I'm going to leave this cave, and I'm going to make a difference, right? So you guys, you have any insights on that, on how the human nature of what makes a human being? Before we talk about Taíno, what makes a Taíno, but what makes a human being? Can you guys break that down? What makes a human being?
I would say what makes a human being is life. For us to be alive, we have to, you know, be connected to the universe, be connected to the creator, you know, having oxygen so that we can breathe and being able to move our bodies. I would say to break that down, that's like the first thing that comes to my mind when describing a human is like the breath of life, be connected to the universe, to the creator.
That's right. The stuff of life, right, of humanity. We need that air, right? Just like
yeah.
the fish
yeah.
in water, we need the air. Okay.
And I feel like to add to that, sorry, can I add to that?
Yes.
You have to add.
I feel like what comes to my mind, the main key points of making any human being, regardless of where they're from or whatever, the main points are the physical aspect of life, the human body, right? The mental capacity that we hold and stuff. So mental, physical. Then we have emotional, the emotional state, how we feel our emotions. I feel like it's such a blessing to be able to communicate with emotions and just be able to feel different things for different scenarios. And then the spiritual aspect, I feel like, is one of the most unlocked and underrated features of the human body that people haven't been able to connect with, but I think is one of the most important parts, like the spirituality of people. So, yeah.
Oh, that's great, man. So you're looking right now, we're looking at, it's like twins, right? 4-4, as Bana mentioned. We got the human world. We got the plant world, the mineral world, and we have the animal world. And then, Anani, you're mentioning about the human nature, right? So we are physical, we are mental, and we are emotional. And last but not least, we're spiritual. That's powerful, man. So I guess, you know, wow, that's deep, man. So check this out. So let's look at the Taíno worldview on this, okay? We look at Guajayona, a cultural hero. We got Mako Kaer. For some reason, he got punished. He got to the door too late, the entrance of the cave. He turns into a mineral. Let's go back and forth. What does mineral, how does that help humanity? How does that help the human being, the mineral world? Anybody want to take a shot at that?
Bana, that's all you.
Oh, I didn't want to speak first unless you had something you wanted to say. When it comes to, like, the mineral world, the first thing that I always think of is just, like stones. And then when it comes to our ancestors and, you know, Taíno spirituality, like, stones is very sacred to us. So when I think of, like, the mineral world, like, that's the first thing that comes to my mind is that stone, having connection to the stones, to the semis, if you wanted to go even more deeper with that specific topic. But, yeah, like, that's the first thing that comes to mind when I think about the mineral world. And I feel like with the mineral world, that's something that we hold sacred to our lineage so that we can be able to connect with the spirit world, especially connecting more with our ancestors as well.
That's great. How about you, Anani? How does the mineral connect to our human nature? How does it help our human nature, the minerals?
Well, before a time of cell phones and paper and pencils, I think stones, I also think about rocks, how caves, those were our communication, and those are how our ancestors were able to speak their language and through pictures and petroglyphs. So I think that these minerals were also a tool that our ancestors and Tainos really appreciated and just like honored. I feel like the mineral world holds so much power of energy.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, man, that's awesome. You know, I haven't met a Taino who didn't like stones, right? I had a collection of stones.
That's very true.
Right? I mean, according to American or capitalistic standards, a stone really is not worth a whole bunch. You can get a whole bag for 99 cents, right? At the 99 cent store, right? Right? But why do we stop and look at those bags of stones like, oh, man, these are so cool, man. You know, I got to get them. Like, what makes us as humans connect so much to stones? Like our ancestors, right? Go ahead.
I would say the reason why, us Tainos, when we look at stones, like that's the first thing that we want to get, is because we have that deep connection still with our lineage. When it comes to like a spiritual aspect, having that connection, we feel those energies when we're looking at the stones, if we're outside looking at rocks. Like that's just our connection to Atabe, to like, you know, Mother Earth and to the ancestors. So I look at that as that connection within us, even though we don't know why we like it at that specific moment, but we just feel that energy. And just like what Anani talked about too, it's just like, you know, the stone was a form of energy. So it's just that connection with that.
Nice. Yeah, man, I don't know about you, but 99 cent store be having some cool stones, man. Right?
No, they don't.
And they just sit there like waiting to be, you know, like, damn, like, please buy me. There's like a whole family of them, right? What do you guys think? You guys have that experience when you go to 99 cent store? No matter how big or small they are, you want to buy them? Like, you want to save them, right?
Right, no, definitely.
And I feel like you can use them for everything, literally, like decoration, but like in a cleansing kind of sense of like just sit being in your home, and like it's kind of comforting when you have a bunch of stones. Like, you ever go to a park and you're having a picnic, or you're just sitting down meditating, feeling the fresh air? What's surrounding you? All these rocks and stones that have been on this earth before humans. It's like they all carry energy, and they all, I feel like if you pay attention, they kind of communicate with you in spiritual ways. It's kind of special.
No, it really is special.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? Many years ago, I studied, I used to love Nelson Mandela. A lot of people don't know that the great late Nelson Mandela, first black president in South Africa, he was actually a chief. And he was of the Madiba clan of the Xhosa speaking Thimbu people in South Africa, and he has the bloodline as a chief, and he decided to become a lawyer, and as we know through history, he was arrested for his activism against racism, apartheid. You know, when you're black or brown, you have no rights. You had to carry a passport. You know, so. Similar to our Jim Crow laws here in the 1950s and so on before that. But basically, when he was arrested, he spent 37 years in jail, you know, for his activism. And in his book, Long Road to Freedom, he talks about how they were allowed to take showers once a day, and it was by the ocean. It had this wall that had a hole, and that hole connected to the ocean. So they used to take these bitterly cold showers from ocean water. It wasn't regular water, it was ocean water. But Nelson Mandela, he says that it kept him strong through the years because the ocean contains 100 minerals, the same minerals that's contained in your blood. So it actually kept them strong, you know. So
wow.
Yeah. So the
that's powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the prison system saw that as a punishment, you know, cold, icy ocean water, you know. And guess what? Kept these men alive for many, many years, gave them strength. So I learned that from his book, Great Chief, you know, Nelson Mandela. Okay, so how, and you know, in the Taino stories, our sacred story talks about Mako Kaen, he of the eyes that do not blink. He became the mineral person, you know. He was punished for it, for not coming to the entrance, right? And then we have, what's the other gift? So it's humanity, mineral, and what's the other one?
Plants and animals.
Oh, let's talk about plants. How do plants help us?
Plants are, I feel like we wouldn't be alive without plants. I feel like they help us be able to consume them. So we eat vegetables that are plants, and then literally trees, which provide oxygen. Like, we need that to survive. And it's so important because I feel like those are things that people tend to abuse, like deforestation and, you know, all of that cool stuff. Without plants, we wouldn't be here, or we wouldn't be able to live in this society in today's times of, like, building stuff, furniture, paper, pencils. Like, we wouldn't be able to survive at all.
Yeah, exactly, man. Exactly. I think it's so important. We'll be drowning in our poison, right? Carbon monoxide poisoning.
Yeah.
Plants
heal. Mm-hmm. They literally heal and cure diseases. Yeah.
How about you, Bana? What do you think about the plant world?
When I think about the plant world, I have, like, a huge connection with the plant world. And I feel like that is just, like, part of our lineage with our ancestors, because our ancestors were very attuned to Mother Earth, and they used plants for their healing practices. And if we didn't have the plants, and if we didn't have Mother Earth, like, we wouldn't be here at all. I feel like a lot of people just don't understand the beauty in plants and what they do for us, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, and also spiritually. So, the plant world is very sacred to our ancestors. And I feel like, you know, we definitely need to, you know, be more attuned with it and respect it. Because there's other attributes that people are doing right now, especially with the environment, that people are taking advantage of Mother Earth and not respecting her and not giving her that opportunity to help us. We're, you know, taking advantage of her. So.
Oh, yeah, big time, right? Wow. So it seems like our ancestors, they were onto it, you know? You know, those people that came out the cave, they turn into the hobo trees. I don't know. I mean, my theory is that the hobo fruit was probably a very popular fruit, or the popular fruit for the Taino ancient ones, right? The hobo.
Yeah.
And anyway, when you were in Borinquen, in Puerto Rico, yeah, you had some hobo. Remember that we had hobo? Is that the one that has, like, all these needles inside when you bite it, when you eat the fruit? You know?
Yeah, I don't really remember that.
Was it really bitter?
No, it's sweet. But what happens is when you eat the fleshy part of the hobo, it leaves behind these needles, like, that pokes the hell out of you.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, it's kind of It kind of reminds me of Tai Chi, you know, where, you know, it's soft and yet it's pointy. It's hard, you know, like it can cut, you know, it hurts like a needles, you know. Which kind of adds to the whole dualism, right? Sweetness and also danger, like pain, you know, like hurt yourself with this, you know. So yeah, maybe we could do a show on hobos next time, right? I want it in the future.
Yeah.
Is that something that you can get shipped out?
What's that?
Oh, I said, is that something that you can get shipped out to us, like for us to try or something?
Nah, man, it's not an exported fruit because it's an invasive fruit here in the United States.
Oh wow.
Yeah, but you can get a whole bunch of them like for a dollar. You know, they're good stuff. You know, on the hobo tree, and. I was going to say, it's not carbon monoxide, it's carbon dioxide. You know, if the trees do not filter that, we're dead, right? We're pretty much dead. So we need these trees. But sometimes humans can be weird. You know, we cut down trees, right?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. We're in a sad situation now with the... Are we killing the tree people, you know? Okay, so now we got the plants. You know, a lot of our plant medicine, right? We heavily rely on plant medicine, right? And that's another issue, too. We're cutting down the trees to get this plant medicine to make these drugs and so on. It's kind of sad, you know, that so many people, too, right? The demand is so great that we're destroying our rainforest. So that's another issue there. Oh, man. And what's the fourth gift that Atabe Yokahu gave us? What's the fourth one now?
Animal.
Oh, man. That's right. Wait a minute. Hold on. Somebody wants to talk to represent the animal world.
Well, me and Lucille, we were feeling good, so we got us a cabin way back in the woods. We stepped out for a breath of air, met an 8-foot man all covered with hair. Bigfoot stole my baby.
Wait a minute, Bigfoot, wait a minute, Sasquatch. Wait a minute. Well, Bigfoot is kind of half animal, half person, right? Human, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so next time I go camping, I hope Bigfoot forgives me, you know?
Oh, man.
They say, help, help. But, yes, what do you think about animals? Are they nice animal people? Are they vicious? What do you think about animals?
I would say with animals, they have a lot of wisdom to share with us. They're very sacred to our ancestors as well, especially like, you know, the goat.
Oh, I think we lost her. Wait, is Bana there? Hello?
Oh, no. Bana?
I think we lost her. Well, she's from the mountains of the Poconos. She's way up there.
Oh, no.
So you tell us, Anani, what do you think about animal world? The animal world.
I was
going
to bring up a point where I feel like animals, because of Western colonization and stuff, I feel like animals are misunderstood. And I say that because I feel like people are so quick to say, like, animals are vicious or... You know, animals don't have feelings. It doesn't matter if we kill them for our pleasure or food. But I feel like animals are so misunderstood because they have their own emotions and they have their own brain. They have the same kind of organs that we do in order to, like, feel and think. And, you know, they're always on survival mode. They're very smart. But I feel like they're so misunderstood because, you know, we're at the top of the food chain, right, humans?
Yeah.
But I felt like our ancestors had the exact opposite mindset and did understand the animals.
and did, you know, in our creation stories, a lot of the animals were so big in the creation story. And I feel like it's so deep and interesting that our ancestors were able to have a better and healthier relationship with animals than humans today, and especially with the Western culture and colonization, it kind of ruined a lot of animals and our relationship with animals.
I definitely agree with that.
Oh, she's back.
Yay, Bana, you're back.
I'm back. I don't know what happened, but it's okay. I'm here.
Yay.
But I actually want to add to that because, like I was saying previously, you know, animals have a lot of wisdom, and animals is very, you know, sacred to our lineage. But when it comes to, like, the Western civilization and colonization, a lot of people think of animals as just, like a prop. When it comes to, like, indigenous cultures, we're one with the animal. Like, we treat the animal as our equal. In today's society, we treat it as our pet. And I feel like that's like a huge disconnect with society because we treat them as a prop. Like, oh, we're just going to take care of it and that's it. But when you think about it in like an indigenous mindset, especially with our ancestors, like we treated animals with respect and we treated them as our own, like our family, especially with the plant world as well. It was all connected. It wasn't just one-sided. Like how you was explaining about like the food chain,
mm-hmm.
that is different when it comes to indigenous culture.
Yeah.
And it's funny as human beings, right? We kind of use the animals for nutrition. You know, that's for a lot of people, that's their way of life. I know, Alani, you're a vegetarian, right? So, yeah. Wait, you eat plants. Hey, how dare you eat the plants?
You know, it's interesting because they say scientists have done studies where, like, at a certain, like, sound vibration, you know what I'm trying to say, but a certain
frequency.
Sound hurts. Yeah, frequency, yes. You can hear plants screaming, you can hear them like talking, and of course not like English, but like you can hear them communicating, but it has to be I forgot which certain frequency it has to be, but you can literally hear them screaming, especially when you touch them or when you like cut them or like, you know, it's really cool.
Oh, I definitely heard about that as well, but I don't remember what frequency it is, but I learned about that. It's very sad.
Mm-hmm. It is sad. They're alive just like us.
Yeah. You know, I can tell you a great story, man. The first time that I was honored, an old friend of mine brought me to a ayahuasca ceremony. And it was like kind of an underground ceremony because it's still considered illegal. Imagine a plant is illegal, right? It's illegal and ayahuasca because it contains the DMT. And DMT is what was contained in the Cohova, you know, our ancestral medicine. So the ceremony lasted 8 hours, and I consumed 2 cups of this plant medicine called ayahuasca, right? And it was one of the most incredible experiences in my life. And I could just briefly mention that after the first 20 minutes, you just leave your body. You're in a celestial world, you know. And I found myself walking in a rainforest, you know. And it was very humid, and, you know, I could hear the animals in the background. And I was like, whoa, this is deep stuff, man. You know, you could just sense it, you know, like you're in a different world.
Yeah.
And then I remember the plants started talking to me. And they were so happy to see me. They're like, hey, look, our brother's here. And you see all the flowers dancing. And at this point, I'm like, yo, this is no joke. You know, like they're talking to me, you know, and I'm like, talking back to them, and I remember when I left that section in the ceremony, they kept telling me, you need to eat us for you to live. You need to eat us so you can be healthy. We will live. We will live in you. They kept telling me this, like in a song. Mm-hmm. We will live in you. We will never die. That's what they kept telling me, you know. And I'm like, oh my God, like, you know, they want me to eat them so they can live, so they won't die. They live in me. And then I was like, yeah. Yo, this is some deep stuff. And then I remember I started walking into some darkness, like complete dark, and I got scared. It got very cold. And then I remember all of a sudden I felt like people were bumping into me. Like, you know when people run and they hit you, you know? And you're like,
yeah,
oh, shoot.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, shoot, what's going on? And it was like a crowd of people kept bumping me, and I was getting upset. Like, yo, it's dark, you know? So I'm getting upset, and I'm scared, too, at the same time. And it's mad cold. And I could hear the medicine man singing during this whole ceremony. And then I heard these people singing, they kept saying, we have to protect the queen. We have to protect. So can you imagine a rattle? We have to protect the queen. We got to protect the queen. We got to protect the queen. That's all they kept saying was the queen. I'm like, what the hell? And then I noticed, like, in the distance, I noticed, like, a light. You know, it's almost like follow the light kind of thing, you know? You ever hear that? So then all of a sudden I'm running, because if I don't run, they'll run over me. That's how many people were there. So I'm running. It was kind of cool. I was running fast, right? And then they were running so fast. They were super faster than me. I could feel one person grab my left elbow and the other person grab my other elbow, and they picked me up. So I was no longer running because I couldn't keep up with them. So they're helping me. And then all of a sudden I saw this hole, and it was like a light on the other side of the hole. And then when I got to the hole, I couldn't fit. I was too big, you know? And then I heard all these people like I caused a traffic jam, you know? And they kept saying to me, we got to protect the queen. We got to protect the queen. Like in a song, you know, I can't even remember the song, but it was like in rhythm, you know? And then they started pushing me into this hole. Now I'm getting anxiety right now. Like, what the hell? You know, I can't fit in this hole. And then I realized with the light, I can see their faces now, because now I can see who they are. So when I looked to the left, I saw all these ants, like their ant faces. You know, the ants when they have a face. And I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, holy shit, these are ants. And then I looked to the right, and it was more ants. I'm like, oh, my God. And I realize I'm in, like, a canal. You know those – you know how ants, they live in these canals, right? Like these tunnels, whatever?
Yeah.
That's what it was. It was a tunnel. So then they're pushing me, and I'm causing a traffic jam. Finally, I go through this hole, and I start to fall. And I see all thousands of ants falling with me. And they're still singing, we got to protect the queen, we got to the queen. And then it dawned on me, wait a minute, ants, they always protect the queen, right, in an ant. So I'm like, oh, shoot, I'm probably going to land in an ant, whatever, the queen. I'm going to meet the queen, right? So then I'm looking around, and I'm looking at space. I'm looking at the planets. I'm looking at... It was like the most beautiful thing in my life I've ever seen. I saw stars and galaxies. You know the stuff you see in the microscope? You know, they recently show all these galaxies and stuff? The Hubble scope, whatever? That's what I was seeing. And I wanted to pass out because it was just overwhelming with emotion, you know. And I heard the medicine man. He kept singing. You know, he was singing his songs. And then all of a sudden, I'm looking down because we're like free falling. And I got no parachute. I'm like, oh, shit, I'm going to die, you know? And then I see, like, a little ball, and that's where we're heading, to this ball. And as we get closer to the ball, I can see the ball was, like, blue and green, right? As I'm getting closer, I realize, oh, shit, that's the Earth, you know? The Earth is the queen. You guys get it?
Wow.
Yeah.
It, it just made all the perfect sense in my life. And then all of a sudden I'm falling and I'm in the, you know, when they say like when you go in the atmosphere, you kind of like burn up, you know, that's kind of how I felt, but I felt no pain. So I'm just following the ants, man. And we're free falling. All of a sudden I'm getting closer to the earth. I see the sky. I see the clouds. And I see the land, but it was like no cities or anything. It was like pure land, grass, trees. And then I kept saying, oh, shit, I'm going to die. I'm going to die, you know. Now I'm scared. And then all of a sudden, I reach right before the land. I remember saying, oh, my God, I hope this is not – I'm not going to die right now. And then, bam, I hit the land, and it's like mud. I felt like in a you know how – kids play with mud and all that. Bam, I fell in mud and broke my fall. And guess what happened? Take a guess what happened. Who was in this mud?
The queen.
Good guess. It was like it was like centipedes and eels and fish.
Oh, wow.
And all these creepy crawlers all over me. And they kept saying to me, like in song, like, hey, he's here, he's here, he's here, he came, let's play. They wanted to play with me, and it was like these centipedes, and oh, my God, I saw like the little legs on me, and instead of me being grossed out, I was happy. You know, the mud, it felt like soft and warm, you know, and I was having a fun time, and that lasted like an hour, I think, playing with the centipedes and all that. And then after that phase, it got a little deeper, you know, like in a sense of different. What I like to say, a lot of people who take an ayahuasca, it's like you go into your DNA. You go back in time, and that's what happened to me. But before I went back in time, I was in this world with the trees, the flowers, the animals, the insects. It was amazing, man. So this is what they, and then when I spoke to the medicine man, eight hours later, I shared my experience with him, and he was like, yeah, man, this is the essence of life. You just entered the essence of life. You just entered the heart of God, you know, the stuff that makes life, you know. And then when I read the creation stories, it's right there, man. You get it? Like the minerals. The plant world,
yeah.
The animals, the insects, it was all there, man. So it's the stuff of life, you know. What do you guys think about that, what I was just saying? Anything came to your head?
Well, thank you for sharing that story with us.
No, thank you.
Definitely very powerful. And when you was, you know, sharing your story, what came to me was just like, you allowed the essence of earth to come to you. Like, you listened. And when people don't listen, they don't have that, they don't feel that connection. So, like, with you, you listened, and you allowed it to come to you. And I feel like that's a very beautiful thing, and that's something that, you know, we have to do more, is to listen more. And to allow things to come to us so that we could build that connection, especially when we're connecting with nature.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing that came to my mind, and I just wanted to share that with you. So.
Oh, that's good. How about you, Alani? Anything came to you? I think you heard this story.
I always love when you tell these vision stories, because I know you've had so many of them, and I feel like each time you have one, it's something like so crazy and cool. I mean, yeah, the ant people, I feel like you connect a lot to the insects specifically, like the spider people and then the ant. You're like the real man. Do you know Ant-Man from, like, Marvel? You're like the real-life version of Ant-Man.
I could definitely see that.
Oh,
right?
My God.
Oh, and then Spider-Man, too.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
man. Well, there you go, man. Comics imitating the spiritual world, right?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Superpowers.
And the ants are the wisest. They're like the wisest insects.
you know what's funny, in the Hopi spirituality, the Hopi people in New Mexico, and so they talk about the ant people, that they're like the guardians of the spiritual realm, you know, the guardians. And when I read that, that made perfect sense, because these ants were taking me to the ultimate spiritual realm, you know. So it was like, wow. But it seems our ancestors were definitely connected. You know, and another thing I learned about these medicines is that in South America, they say that ayahuasca, the reason why it exists is because as humans, we forget our origins. So when you consume the ayahuasca, it helps you reconnect to the source of all life. So when I read that too, I'm like, wow, that's so true, right? The origin stories, you know? Damn, this is really cool. So I don't know if you have if you guys ever had any visions with animals or what is it? It's a big thing in the spiritual, in the indigenous world about animal guides and stuff. Animal spirits, you know. Sometimes the powwows, you see people dressed as coyotes or as bears, you know. Yeah. You know, the claws and stuff. Feathers, right? Feathers is a big thing. I don't know if you want to share.
Yeah.
Or not.
For me, I don't think I've ever been able really to connect to, like, what, you know, people say what their spirit animal is. I don't think I've ever been able to connect, or like I haven't had any visions or dreams about my animals, and I know a lot of people do, but I haven't for some reason. I don't know.
Right. Damn. You know, it's funny that it's funny how in modern society right now, contemporary society, these plant medicines are all illegal. The ayahuasca, jojoba, what's the other medicine? I can't forget now. Peyote. You know, they consider illegal drugs. Like, they, you know, you're caught with these medicines, you're going to jail. You know what I mean? So it's kind of interesting how society looks at this. The indigenous world, we see it as a connection to our origins. In the contemporary world, you're going to jail. What do you guys think about that?
I also want to share about, like, you know, connecting with the animals before I touch upon that question. I know for me personally, when I do, like, my journeys, you know, I connect with, like, wolves. I would have two wolves that would work with me. Then throughout, like, my other journeys, I would have other animals come to me, especially spiders as well. But for me personally, like, they come and go. And I feel like the reason why some of them come and go is because I needed them at that specific moment in my life. And they taught me what I needed to know at that specific moment. I do have other ones that, you know, are with me constantly, but the other ones, like, I have spiders, like, actually, like, last year, I had, like, spiders come to me a lot. And the thing is, I'm terrified of spiders. So it took me a really long time to, like, not be afraid and not try to kill them. Because, like, I started to understand that, you know, they were here to teach me something in a specific moment in my life. I still have moments where I'm a little terrified of certain stuff because I'm not really too fond about, like, insects. But it's something that I'm still learning, you know.
Yeah,
so try to still connect, but also try to, you know, remove my emotions of, like, my fear.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, when it comes to, you know, the indigenous worldview and, you know, the regular, like, you know, society worldview and how they see our medicine as, quote unquote, evil or, you know, addiction, so on and so forth, I just feel like the reason why that they want to do stuff with punishment is because they want to control. It's like power and control. and they just don't fully want to actually sit down and listen and to understand why we have this connection with our medicine and to also respect it. And they just want us to not be able to have access to that. Because if you really think about it, when someone removes some power over a group of individuals, they're not going to have that opportunity to gain their power back. So with the society worldview thinking that this is a punishment, you have to go to jail if you take certain drugs or something like that, it's because they don't want us to actually know who we are. They don't want us to get our power back because they want to remove our light. And that's kind of how I take it as.
It's like they want us to be extinct.
Yes.
Wow, that's powerful stuff there. Wow, you guys are bringing great insight into this whole discussion of Taino Indigenous Caribbean identity, you know, who we are as humans. So it's safe to say in 1491, the last great year, right, physically we were powerful people. We were eating papaya, hobos. We were eating fresh fish, seafood, and everything, the plants, right? But I could imagine physically we were doing well, right? Mentally, I don't think we suffered much from depression, anxiety. Maybe when it was a famine or something or a drought, maybe there was some issues of anxiety there, right? But it seems like our ancestors mentally were prepared. When the hurricane came, it wasn't a disaster. It was an opportunity to grow, right? To rebuild. So our mentality was really powerful, strong, right? Together we grow, you know? And then, what is it? Emotionally, I know we probably had a lot of joy, right? A lot of celebrations, the bate game, the arreto, our secret ceremonies with sport and dance and singing. So I think emotionally they were good, right?
Yeah.
Right. And then
definitely.
Spirituality, man. Wow. We were right there, right, in the spiritual world, physical world. We were having fun. Our spirituality was all about fun. That's my opinion. So you guys want to add any insight in that? How our Taino ancestors, how they lived a human life, a human experience. You know, Columbus wrote in his journal, he says he never met a more beautiful people in his life, you know, and he's traveled around, and that's his words. He's like, wow, these people are beautiful, and they speak beautiful, they act so kind. I remember after the invasion, Bartolomé de las Casas, the priest, the defender, he says that these people are more Christian than any Christian I know. In other words, they live a good life. They were good people. So I don't know if you guys want to add to that, to our ancient ancestors. As human beings.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, after visiting Borican and just being able to stand on the land and really see what the nature of it was all, I can imagine how, like, at peace our ancestors were. And, like, when I picture it in my mind, I just see, like, the birds chirping, the rainbow, the sun is out, the water is so blue, and, like, the animals are happy. Everyone was just happy. And I can also imagine, like, their skin was beautiful, glowing, the sun was bright. Like, I just generally felt like it was all happiness, because when you're in such a peaceful environment, that automatically boosts your mood. And it kind of connects to the emotion and the mental. Like, once you're in such an environment that you're comfortable and happy and feel at peace, like, the rest of it comes with it. So I definitely know our ancestors were at peace before the invasion. And it's something that they were able to live, and something that we won't really be able to like not the same in the sense like you won't be able to have that same connection because of, you know, society today. But when you go to the islands and you go to the mountains, you can really tell, like, even the people who live there now are trying to like rebuild that same kind of thing of like feeling at peace with what they can do to maintain it like that.
Exactly. Bonnie, you want to share anything?
Yes, I definitely want to add to that. When I think about our ancestors back then, when I connect with them, I definitely feel that peacefulness. When it comes to our sacred medicine and how our ancestors lived, it was, you know, they stood on a high vibrational level. And when we connect to the universe, to the creator, and we connect with our medicines, we're vibrating very high when you want to look at it on an energetic level.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think of society now, we can't really do that because of the social norms of, you know, evolution from, you know, different governments and empires and, you know, the workforce, you know, all of that still, in my opinion, goes into that power and control. When it comes to, like, society today, we can't really just go out and, like, be able to connect with Mother Earth. You know, we have to do our daily routines. So when I think of our ancestors back then, like, they had that opportunity to be able to connect with the Creator, to be in a peaceful environment. And right now, like, we can't really do that. And I feel like now, like, when we're reconnecting, especially those that are on the island, they're, like Anani said, they're trying to rebuild that. And that's going to help us be able to connect to the divine and to be able to connect with our ancestors.
It's all about that connection, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely that ancestral veneration too. You know, they practiced back in the day.
Yeah.
But you know what's interesting? That there's been a lot of studies on this in recent times about that intergenerational trauma. It's very similar to what a soldier experiences in war when they come back. The trauma of what they saw, you know, death, murder, you know, killings, and, you know, war is ugly. For us, you know, we carry in our DNA, you know, experiences of war, right? It's in our DNA. So it's just sad how we were stripped of our relationship with the mineral world, the animal world, right? The plant world.
Yeah.
Community. So we're still struggling mm-hmm. with that. It's in our DNA, man. Mm-hmm. We're struggling with that intergenerational trauma.
Yeah.
Definitely. And in order for us to heal that, we have to heal within ourselves, but we mm-hmm. also have to do the healing of the land to be able to yeah. heal our lineage so we can, you know, take back what they took from us. But it all starts with us.
You know, that's a great point. There's a great book called The Original Instructions of Indigenous Peoples. Maybe we could dedicate a show on that. It's an organization that they invite indigenous peoples throughout the world to talk about their relationship with the land. And I remember in the book, it talks about how humans, indigenous peoples, they realize that the success of their existence, you know, throughout time, rely on how they understood the earth. In other words, the plant world needed to be pruned sometimes, you know. You know, you just can't let the plant world grow wild, you know. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of work with the land, you know what I mean? So it can produce enough fruits, vegetation. If not, it can overwhelm. So we kind of, indigenous people, we were the first to understand that we need to work with the land, you know. And you kind of reminded me that just that when you said that, Bana. You know what I mean? And wow, we got to do a show on that. The original instructions.
That'll be really fun. I'm definitely down for that.
Yeah. I mean, tribal populations grew when we figured out that, oh, man, we have a role in grooming the earth. It's like grooming your mother, you know, cutting her hair, you know, and giving her a bath. You know, it's like she needs that help. You know, it's not automatic. There needs to be a relationship, you know. And
yeah.
And our ancestors did that when they did that technique of burning the land. And then and then they used to leave that land for 2 years. They'll come back and it was regenerated, you know. The nutrients will come back. The slash and burn technique. See, we learned these techniques through trial and error.
You know, we
learn about the poison mushrooms and the poisonous plants, you know. So yeah, man, we could talk all night, man. What do you think about that?
No, literally.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what do you guys think? One last question. What do you guys think about climate crisis right now that's going on?
Oh, I got a lot to say. Oh, my goodness. Well, first, since I major in environmental science and what I'm learning currently right now in my classes, our first, like, lessons and conversations that we have amongst each other is always involving in climate change and climate crisis. I know, like, for one of my classes, I always talk about indigenous culture because my intentions for my degree is to focus on indigenous sovereignty. So I always do research, especially in the islands of Boringen as well. But right now, the climate change and climate crisis it's affected a lot of the indigenous communities at this moment. And especially with what, again, of the research that I've been learning about, is climate change has affected the island huge. It's very devastating. And just hearing all the news and other areas around the world, especially the Willow Project as well, is very heartbreaking. And it's just the fact that, like, Mother Nature is telling us that we need to make a change. But, of course, in today's society, everything evolves around money and glory. But it's just really, it's really sad. And every time I talk about it, it breaks my heart because, you know, we have this huge connection with Mother Earth when it comes to our lineage. But it just makes me very upset that it's just a constant thing that we have to talk about. And it's just like we're going backwards instead of moving forward with a lot of these cases.
Yeah. Well, for me, I feel like we're so far in deep in trouble with it. It's like, it's so hard to try and start recovering from it because, honestly, our leaders have failed us, so-called leaders, whatever. They have failed us. A lot of people just simply don't care. And we live in a society that's so full of judgment that the indigenous community has no support from anybody other than other indigenous communities. And I feel like the indigenous communities specifically are trying so hard to continue to fight for their land, for their water, for their animals, for the communities, and just no one simply cares. Like, our government is just so corrupt. They don't care at all. And it's like, well, how much longer can we keep fighting for ourselves? Like, people just need to wake up and realize that the only way that we're going to make it through this is if we really do unify. support each other, have each other's back. Like, it's just not black and white. Like, it has to be together, like, unification. And I think indigenous communities, I feel like a lot of them have given up because they have the sense of, well, how much longer can we keep fighting for this? And that's why a lot of our indigenous friends and stuff just fall in depression, and, you know, they turn to drugs and stuff, and that's a whole other thing. But it's sad. Like, I don't know how much longer this planet can hold on for. So.
No, I definitely agree. And I feel like with a lot of people that don't care, it's because it's not their problem. They don't take initiative to put themselves in our shoes.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's frustrating because it's just like, you could at least do that for me to understand. And that's just like, that's just like human decency, is to put yourself in someone else's shoes and understand their perspective and coming together as a community. If you don't feel like you want to be on, you know, up front in the world fire, that's perfectly fine. Everybody has their choice on how they want to do things. But just to understand and to listen and actually give us support and coming together as a community, I feel like that would be the first steps for us to start seeing more change. But, you know.
And it always we like regret it until the worst happens. Like, that's they wish that they could. It's like, well, what do you think people have been trying to tell you and stuff? Like, they're saying that if this planet makes it that far, it's going to get to the point where it's going to be so bad that we're going to be paying for oxygen tanks and stuff, because our air quality is going to get so bad and the ozone layer is going to break in. It's just, it's going to get so much worse. And I don't think people realize that. Like, people are just going about their day-to-day lives and just worried about now. But, like, we can't worry about right now when we're just continuing to destroy our Earth.
Right. No, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, so scary.
Definitely. You go to 1491, fast forward to 2023. Physically, we have cancers and all these diseases, COPD, asthma, right? Physically. Mentally, we have depression, schizophrenia, bipolar, borderline, anger management. We got all these mental health issues, right? And then we got drugs are commonplace for people to try to cope, right? And then emotionally, you know, anger, hate, red state, blue state, white, black, you know, all this civil war right now in America, Ukraine, Russia, and then spirituality. What is that all about now in 2023, right?
No, literally.
Seems like so many people have lost their way, you know, spiritually because of all this stuff. So it's time for the indigenous people, right, to rise up. And hey, we have the original instructions.
The end.
So what makes a Taino indigenous Caribbean person? My theory is it means that we're going to resist that which is not healthy, right? We're going to resist. We're going to rebel by showing those original instructions, right? The dance.
Yeah.
Right? The sport. Being one with the animals, the plant world, right? And also community, right? Community building, right?
Yeah.
You can't do it alone, right? Tell me. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like one of the biggest things that no one also, like, realizes that we have to, like, listen to our elders, like, what they have to say, what their advice is, because they've lived through it longer than, you know, the next generation and the generation after that. I feel like, part of, like, community building and unifying is also just, like, connecting more with their elders in the sense of, like, and, you know, in the indigenous community, we respect them so much because they're, you know, they're the keepers of it all.
Yeah, You know what's cool? 6 years ago, I encounter a young teenage girl, Renata Flores Rivera. She's an indigenous person from the Quechua people back in Peru. And she heard Michael Jackson's song, The Earth Song. I don't know if you guys know that song, The Earth Song. Yeah, so she was moved by it, you know. It's great music and lyrics. And so she spoke to her grandmother and says, "Grandma, can you translate these words for me into Quechua, the Quechua language, which is a very ancient language?" And then the grandmother said, "Okay, let's try it." And she did. She translated the Earth Song. So I want to play this song. It was published 6 years ago. I think she's 21 now, Renata Flores. So let's see if I can play this really well. I don't have the rights to this song. I haven't downloaded it to the studio, but I'm using YouTube, all right? So if a commercial comes on, I'm going to stop it. So let's see if you guys can hear it. Wow, that's amazing. What do you guys think about that?
That was so beautiful. I was about to fall asleep because it was very soothing.
No, yeah, that was speechless. Wow.
And it's kind of cool. She went with, she asked her grandmother to translate the song, and you see the instruments are from the Quechua culture, you know? So if if you look it up, it's on YouTube. It's called Renata, R-E-N-A-T-A, Flores Rivera, Earth Song. Cover of Michael Jackson. The version is in Quechua, indigenous language of Peru. Amazing, right? So it's... Yeah, so, hey, actually, we have a caller. It's probably a person who's subscribed to the show. It's a 314 number. I see a hand raise. So I'm going to introduce the person and see if he or she has any questions. What do you guys think? We're going to do a random caller who wasn't really planned. But you guys are down or what?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
All right. 314, if you can hear me, I want to put you live, okay?
I got a question about the Taino.
Oh, yeah.
So
sir,
what time frame? What time frame? My name is Pianki.
Oh, how you doing, sir? Where you from?
Well, I'm from the Midwest, and in the summer, in the wintertime, I'm down south. And also parts of Africa. But my question is, what time frame are we talking about with the Taino? I know that the Taino and the Aztecs didn't get along too well. So what time frame are we talking about? Do you have any relevance on that?
Well, according to archaeology, you're talking 7,000 years of migration to the islands. From the original migration came from the Central America, like the Yucatan, which reached Cuba. And then you have the Mexican migration, the Aztecs, the Maya that came from north, from Mexico region. And they were settling, say, 5,000 years ago. Then you got the Arawak people, the south from Colombia, Venezuela, up the Orinoco River. They went up the chain of the Virgin Islands, you know, Trinidad, Tobago, the Virgin Islands, so they reached Puerto Rico. Yeah, so there's multiple migrations, you know, from the north, from Central America, from South America, and so on.
So now, they would have came into North and Central America from across the Bering Straits ahead of that Asian group that came to be known as Indians, am I right?
Well, you know, it's funny because a lot of traditional natives don't agree with that theory, but with the new DNA studies going on and so on, it seems like that's one of the migration stories right now.
Yeah, DNA sequencing. DNA sequencing, children, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was reading
the thing, too, that the day before they came across the Bering Strait, they were Asians because that's where they was coming from. And, of course, when they came to this part of the world, like walking down along the coastline, they stayed close to the coastline because where they came from, they depended on getting their food from the ocean. So they walked down the coastline down into, you know, Central and, of course, Southern America. From what DNA sequencing. So they would be the indigenous, as far as his chronological is concerned. They would be more indigenous than anybody else.
Well, you know, to be fair to the tribes up in the Pacific Northwest, the Ojibwe, Anishi Ojibwe is a tribe up there that they have an oral tradition that the migration went from north to Asia. And the Tibetans, they have a headdress that's similar to their headdress, the Anishi Ojibwe. And the Tibetans will tell you, oh, yeah, those are our ancestors that came from the west, from the east. So there's a lot of theories, a lot of oral traditions, and you got science. You know, it's a lot of lot of stuff, you know. But I know that
you would have to look at the possibilities. If we're talking about modern man coming out of Africa, they would have came out of Africa, the Asia, then on across. And I don't think they would have came the other from I guess what we call today Europe. Wasn't really Europe back in those times, because they wouldn't have no way to cross the North Sea. North Sea is treacherous.
Exactly. Well, you know what? That's the original Homo sapiens, right? From Africa, the motherland, right? Somewhere north.
That's one theory. You had some of the oldest, but you did also have evolution that occurred with Neanderthal on the living on the African continent. I mean, that's just the way human beings done it. Have you ever told your kids to stay on the porch and they don't listen? They wander around.
That's true. Yeah, probably, you know. Well, I know in South America, it became, the tribes became very crowded, so they started moving, you know. They went up the river.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look for new land, you know. But you know what's interesting?
Yeah, you
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, that the Clovis baby that was discovered in Montana, southern Montana, was it?
Mm-hmm.
They, when they did the DNA, they said it was like Clovis culture, right, which is like, what, 12,500 years ago, North America,
mm-hmm.
considered the first indigenous peoples. In the Caribbean, 90% of Taino people, Caribbean people that took DNA, match that Clovis boy, the DNA.
Mm-hmm.
So we're descendants of that Clovis, you know, so it's kind of cool.
Well, I guess that if you were to take a canoe from Florida, you probably couldn't make it to Trinidad and that without too much difficulty. But coming from the other side of the ocean this way, that would be literally impossible. But I wouldn't want to.
You know, in San Juan, Puerto Rico, they I forgot what that's called. That's the transatlantic, some kind of current. That will take, you know, because there was some theories about that. The Tainos came to North America because there's a lot of artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
There's Taino in Georgia,
mm-hmm.
near as far as New York State. So in San Juan, I forget what year, but it was before COVID, maybe 2017. They did take that.
Mm-hmm.
They took a canoe, and they got the current, and they ended up north. They came all the way up to north. But it's a one-way street. You can't go back.
You can't go back. You're right.
Yeah.
Not the way the earth is turning. It has been turning anyway.
Exactly.
Well, it's interesting to study that and to be able to speak on it. It's just, it's
there's
part of humankind.
Definitely. And there's also Polynesian DNA found in South America, Caribbean. That's another migration story right there.
Well, that's a long trip there.
Yeah, man. So that's great. Are you a subscriber here to Taino Radio? Because we didn't advertise the show. So
no, I just happen to be kind of moving around. I've seen the word Taino, and I always have, spoke about them and the Mayan and so on and so on. And I like to straighten out people when they say Indians. So I say, well, that's not true. See, when they came, it was other people here also. Yeah, really nobody knows who was first. Like I said before, people wander around. And, back in them days, you had to run fast from animals, like the woolly mammoth and herd of back. You had to run from the dinosaurs. So.
Yeah. But, Bana, Anani, you have anything to share with our guest? Hello, you there?
Yeah, I was going to say thank you for sharing. That was so interesting to hear, and your perspective about everything too. Wow, thank you for joining. Oh my God, that was so cool.
Yes, thank you for joining.
Yeah, good what you guys are doing. Keep up, the exploratory work. It's always good to listen to something from a different perspective.
Yep, that's very true.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you. We're just trying to show the world that we exist, right? We still exist. We're still here.
Well, yeah. They would have to come up and touch you to believe you. I'll talk to you guys later.
God bless you. Take care, man.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
All right. Good job. Well, guys, I guess, you know, we got a mysterious caller. That's wonderful from the Midwest.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that's the first time Midwest. Like, wow.
And like I said, I didn't advertise this show. This is going to be archived. But we got a live caller. You know, you never know who's calling in, right? Who's listening, I should say.
Right. That's very true.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I got another song for the Earth Mother. What do you think about this song? She will never die, right?
Nope, never.
Oh, my God. Well, guys, listen, we're running out of time. It's like 3 minutes left. We went 90 minutes in this show. That's great.
Look at that.
So I just want to tell the listeners who are listening to us in the future, this is an archive show. On Friday, we're going to be back. That's April Fool's, right? April 1st, we're going to be back. And we're going to – no, that's the 31st. Sorry about that. And we're going to discuss the problem of evil. Did the devil, demons exist in the ancient Taino world? Interesting topic. The problem of evil. Did it exist in the ancient Taino world? And does it still exist in the modern Taino world? What do you think about that?
I'm excited to really get into that. That's going to be a very interesting conversation to dissect.
This is one question since day one in Taino Radio. People have asked me about that, you know, about the problem of evil. Does evil exist in the indigenous perspective, Taino perspective? You know, does the devil exist? Is there this holy war, you know? So we're going to figure it out. On Friday, we're going to start that discussion. So look out for the flyer, The Problem of Evil. Is it a problem? So, guys, I want to end the show. I want to end the show by thanking you all for taking the effort, taking the time. And I'm going to end the show with the original theme song of Taino Radio, okay, composed by Anani, a.k.a. Waterflower. Bana from the mountains of the Poconos. Thank you for being here with us. And I'll see you Friday, guys. No problem.
See you guys.
Thank you for having
me. I'll see you guys Friday.
See you Friday.